for Thomas More is correct. The right action for the wrong reason is the supreme reason. Man who came from the hand of God as the highest order of creation rarely performs any action without some purpose. Indeed, that reason may not be clearly evident even to the one who performs the act. The limited amount of reflection will almost always reveal some clear purpose. This is true of every action that we perform, therefore. We are here, in this place, at this point in time. Is it too much to ask of you, why, really why are you here? What motivated you to come? What could motivate a person to leave parents and family and friends and comfort of home to spend a few weeks here at Concordia Seminary? But this is not a vacation, as you well know, certainly not in the ordinary sense of the term. So indeed, there is a respite from our regular routine. It's hard work, isn't it? It's a return to the highly disciplined, structured environment in which one is called upon to extend an unusual amount of effort in a relatively short period of time to accomplish a mammoth goal of intellectual growth. It's possible for me, as possible for each of us, I'm sure, to suggest a dozen or two truly laudable, God-pleasing motives for being here. Unfortunately, it doesn't take very much to think that some motives which are ignoble and far from the supreme purpose of the perfect will of God. It's possible, in a word, to fall into the supreme treason and betrayal by doing the right thing for the wrong reason. This is true in every aspect of our life. It's true in the most sacred and holy task which we perform. Thinking immediately of the preparation, the writing, the delivery of sermons is one of the highest things that we do. Is it possible that anything is noble, anything impure, could sully such a perfect work and such a sacred work? Obviously, those of us who engage in it realize that unfortunately Satan is most active in that which is potentially of the highest good. And here, unfortunately, professional pride, professional jealousy fall to their lowest depth. We turn to our text for today. St. Paul recounts for us the fact that he wrote a painful letter to the church of Corinth. Sin existed in the church, a sin which needed to be exposed, rebuked, and dealt with. The letter was so painful that St. Paul agonized and so Titus that word as a salutary effect of the apostle Constance. Probably few things are quite as agonizing to the pastor as that action by which he must rebuke sin and qualify its name again and again, especially to individuals who are involved in it. Nothing pains us more than that. Nothing is more important from time to time. But nothing has resident within it that kind of pain. Nonetheless, it is almost amazing to us that some people can even perform this action for their own motive. It's not at all rare to encounter an individual with a certain theological bent or emotional dent, which enables him to endure this aspect of the Lord's work, almost to glow as he inflicts the pain upon some suffering soul, so much so that the individual almost feels the burning fires of hell after having fallen into the hands of an angry God, or certainly an angry pastor. Contrast this with the words of Robert Moore McShane, who, upon hearing that a fellow minister had preached on the subject of hell the week prior, asked, "Are you able to do it in love?" The basic reason for preaching the law and the judgment of God is to bring men to repentance and ultimately to faith in Jesus Christ, the Redeemer. Hence, we listen again to St. Paul, who presents to us the purest of motives for the doing of a good work. He writes, "Even if I made you sorry with my letter, I do not regret it, though I did regret it. So see that that letter grieved you, though only for a while. As it is, I rejoice, not because you agreed, but because you agreed into repentance. For you felt a godly grief, so that you suffered no loss through us. The godly grief produces a repentance that leads to salvation and brings no regret, but worldly grief produces death. The right act for the right reason is the ultimate loyalty and the ultimate faithfulness." St. Paul followed the very example of the Christ whom he served and adored, that Christ who in his first foray out into the world aimed at this purpose, the proclamation of repentance and faith in the gospel. St. Paul was convinced that the gospel was not merely words, it was action. It was words about God's action in Jesus Christ. That Christ, who not only spoke the word, but one day went up a so-called Calvary and there, upon an accursed cross, suffered and bled and died for the sins of the world. For your quiet betrayal. For my quiet betrayal. He suffered, bled, died, and rose again on our behalf so that we might have forgiveness of our ultimate sin of doing the right thing for the wrong reason. Listen to St. Paul as he writes again to the same church of time. Therefore, do not pronounce judgment before the time, before the Lord comes, who will bring to light the things now hidden in darkness and will disclose the purposes of the heart. That is where the judgment lies, upon the reason for our doing a good act or an evil act for that matter. But primarily, God is concerned for the purposes of the heart. That word is a word of law and of judgment. Each one of us knows the imperfection of our motives and our purposes. But each one of us, thank God, knows that message of the Christ who suffered and bled and died and rose again on our behalf, so that we might have forgiveness of sins. And we who have been baptized into Christ, we who feast regularly upon his living and active word, we who enjoy the fruit of the medicine of immortality in the bread and the wine of the sacrament of Christ's body and blood, know that we have tapped into the source of God's grace and power. Not only of forgiveness, thank God for that, but also of the power. Day by day, as we live in the strength which God provides in word and sacrament, to transmute our quiet betrayal into action of supreme loyalty and faith.